Sonntag lieben Klausen Globen.
You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM. Just remember, live your life.
Hey, I'm Spike Priggin, host of the Bedazzled Radio Hour. Broadcast every week from 12:10 until 2 p.m. Wednesday afternoon, live from Spike's Record Rack, 400 Main Street in the village of Catskill. Every Wednesday, I play pop, rock, soul, country, blues, reggae, and other obscurities, and once in a while, a hit or two. Please check out the Bedazzled Radio Hour with Spike Priggin on WGXE 90.7 FM, Acra, every Wednesday from 12:10 until 2.
A Kind of Ache is a multimedia installation and concert from composer Sarah Hennies, sculptor and conceptual artist Terry Berlier, and electroacoustic duo The Living Earth Show, that reimagines a world designed from and for a queer identity. It's at RPI's MPAC on January 27th from 7 to 10 p.m. And you can find more about this performance from composer Sarah Hennies, sculptor and conceptual artist Terry Bellier, and the Living Earth Show at RPI's MPAC on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of One Universal Media of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Andre Ameko reports at Porcupine Soup that a Rensselaerville man is the latest local to be arrested for his part of the attempted coup in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 2021. Troy Weeks, 37, who used to live in Greenville, was arrested on January 10. He was charged with obstruction of law enforcement during civil disorder, entering or remaining in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds, engaging in physical violence in a restricted building or grounds, impeding passage through the Capitol grounds or buildings, and assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers. The criminal complaint against Weeks says in part, and I quote, "Law enforcement identified an individual who pushed against police and stole a can of oleoresin capsaicin spray from a police officer while located near the entrance to the U.S. Capitol," end quote. The Federal Bureau of Investigation says they found him through an Instagram account belonging to a woman with the last name of Weeks. An estimated 979 defendants have been charged so far in the attempted coup, including several from the Hudson Valley. And you can read the full story at Porcupine Soup. The Catskill Central School District Board of Education selected Melissa A. Barrow to be its next superintendent of schools at its meeting on January 11th. Barrow takes over on February 12th. Barrows said, and I quote, "I am honored and excited to be selected as the next superintendent of the Catskill Central School District. I look forward to working with the board, staff, and families to continue to build upon the strengths of the district while creating new opportunities for student success," end quote. She was most recently assistant superintendent of student programs, assessment, and evaluation in the East Ramapo Central School District in Rockland County. Before that, Barrow was an instructional supervisor, then director. She boasts of increasing the graduation rate there of English language learners by 26% and recently established a high school newcomer academy to support new students as they transition to high school. Board President Deborah Johnson said, and I quote, "Melissa Barrow stood out among a strong pool of candidates. Her skills, experiences, and enthusiasm make her the right person to lead Catskill CSD. The board looks forward to working with Melissa," end quote. 12 parents, staff, and community members assisted the board in interviewing 4 semifinalists for the job. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the Catskill Advisory Group believes the 700,000-acre Catskill Park needs, and I quote, "intensive management," end quote, because of so many new visitors since the beginning of the pandemic. Attendance in the park doubled between 2018 and 2021, according to the report from the group. Locally, this can be seen in the town of Hunter, where hundreds of cars illegally park along both sides of the narrow Route 23A just before Catskill Fall throughout the summer and fall. All those visitors, the report says, and I quote, "has resulted in the degradation of certain natural resources, public safety hazards on mountainside roads, overcrowding at trailheads, litter, illegal camping, and more," end quote. And has, and I quote, "stretched thin local services such as fire, ambulance, police, and mountain rescue teams," end quote. The group was formed in October 2020 with town leaders, local business people, and members of conservation groups to study and make recommendations about the increase in visitors. But the Department of Environmental Conservation, which manages the 700,000-acre Catskill Park, has staffing levels similar to the 1980s. The report recommends the DEC continue to use permit systems in the most crowded areas of the park and adding a small AM radio station to alert arrivals of important information. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st Congressional Districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC Newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
MidHudsonNews.com reports that after 4 days of acrimony, arm twisting, and 15 different ballots, the new Republican majority in the 118th Congress finally saw California Republican Kevin McCarthy sworn in as Speaker of the House very early on January 7th. The 15 different ballots required were the most in 164 years. The resistance to McCarthy's elevation came from 20 hard-right election deniers and loyalists of former President Donald Trump and almost ended with fisticuffs in the House chamber. After lengthy negotiations, McCarthy won a majority over. All other business was halted until the Speaker was elected, including the administering of the oath of office to each of the members. Newly elected Mark Molinaro, a Dutchess County Republican who represents the new 19th Congressional District, did not take his oath until early January 7th. He then returned to New York to speak at a ceremony for State Senator Rob Rollison. Molinaro said the first 4 days in Washington did not go as he planned, but he characterized the process as healthy. Molinaro said, and I quote, "Despite the time it took, don't mistake it for wasted time," end quote. Noting, and I quote, "There are ideological differences within the majority, but they were confronted very early," end quote. He said that Congress can now get on with the work they were sent to do. Molinaro said, and I quote, "Americans want us to work on driving down costs, protecting and securing communities, the safety and security at our borders, energy independence, and education. This is what democracy sometimes looks like, and the differences of opinions were aired out in the full view of the public," end quote. Adding, and I quote, "The American people delivered a divided government, and that means we're going to have our differences, and sometimes that means we're going to air them out in public. Rightfully so," end quote. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Catherine Tully McManus reports for Politico that Connor Tarosian is now legislative director for Mark Molinaro, the Republican who represents New York's 19th congressional district. Tarosian previously was a legislative representative for Representative Glenn Grothman, a far-right Wisconsin Republican. Grothman has been quoted saying such things as, and I quote, "A majority of Americans have voted for a party that wants a world in which you cannot call your parents mom and dad," end quote. And I quote, "I know the strength that Black Lives Matter had on this last election. I know it's a group that doesn't like the old-fashioned family. I'm disturbed that we have another program here in which we're increasing the marriage penalty," end quote. Grothman may be best known for being included in one of HBO comedian John Oliver's People Who Somehow Got Elected series. Molinaro paints himself as a Republican moderate and marched in at least one Black Lives Matter rally as Dutchess County executive, while Tarosian's Twitter feed shows the new congressman has hired an ultra-conservative as his legislative director. On January 9th, new congressperson Mark Molinaro got to take his first votes. Molinaro cast his first ballot for the new rules in the House of Representatives when he again reined back in the C-SPAN cameras that had been showing much more than normal during the long process of electing a Speaker of the House. On his second vote, he laid off 87,000 people enforcing the law as Republicans decided to roll back Joe Biden's recent hiring at the Internal Revenue Service. Molinaro wrote on Twitter that, and I quote, "I just voted to protect families, farmers, and small businesses. No problem has ever been solved by empowering more tax collectors. I voted to repeal Biden's 87,000 new IRS agents," end quote. Both local Republicans, Molinaro and Representative Elise Stefanik, voted for the new rules and the layoffs, while Democrats Pat Ryan and Paul Tonko voted against both bills. In Representative Mark Molinaro's first week in Congress, he has broken several campaign promises, and while running as a moderate, he has voted as a conservative. On March 15, 2022, Molinaro, a Republican, wrote on Twitter, and I quote, "Day one, I introduced a bill to implement broader protections and services for those with disabilities," end quote. Molinaro has yet to introduce such a bill. During his campaign against Democrat Josh Riley, the former Dutchess County executive said he believes abortion should be, and I quote, "rare, safe, and legal," end quote. But Molinaro has voted on the so-called pro-life side twice in his first week in office. On January 11th, Molinaro voted for the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, voting with Republican Elise Stefanik and against local Democrats Paul Tonko and Pat Ryan. Molinaro and Stefanik also voted for a resolution, and I quote, "expressing the sense of Congress condemning the recent attacks on pro-life facilities, groups, and churches," end quote, while Tonko and Ryan voted against. None of those bills are expected to pass the Democrat-controlled Senate or to be signed by President Joe Biden into law. Molinaro did co-sponsor H.R. 22, which would stop the sale and export of crude oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to China. Philip Pantuso and Lana Bellamy are reporting for the Times Union. U.S. Representatives Marcus Molinaro and Mike Lawler January 12th, joined other members of the state GOP congressional delegation, now calling on U.S. Representative George Santos to resign. Freshman Hudson Valley Representative Molinaro said Santos should not continue to serve in the 118th Congress. He said in a statement, and I quote, George Santos's dishonesty has eroded his ability to represent his neighbors and serve in Congress. I don't see how he can continue, end quote. When asked for clarification, Molinaro's communications director, Dan Krantz, texted, and I quote, yes, that statement means he thinks he should resign, end quote. Molinaro failed to respond directly when asked about the $1,000 campaign contribution accepted by his campaign from then-candidate Santos. In a statement from his office, Lawler, Molinaro's 17th congressional district colleague, also said Santos should step down. He said, and I quote, it is clear that George Santos has lost the confidence and support of his party, his constituents, and his colleagues. With the extent and severity of the allegations against him, his inability to take full responsibility for his conduct, and the numerous investigations underway, I believe he is unable to fulfill his duties and should resign, end quote. 6 of 11 Republicans in New York's congressional delegation are now calling on Santos to quit. Lawler, Molinaro, former state GOP chair Nick Langworthy, Nick LaLota, Brandon Williams, and Anthony D'Esposito. However, U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik, the House Republican Conference Chair, who represents the 21st District in the North Country, has said nothing about Santos since the first New York Times story in December raising doubts about the biographical claims of the Long Island congressperson. Stefanik's office did not respond to multiple requests on January 12th for comment about Santos. During his run for Congress, Santos' campaign donated $12,000 to at least a dozen Republican candidates, seven of whom won their races. Three of the New York Republicans who received political contributions from Santos, U.S. Representative D'Esposito, Nassau County Comptroller Elaine Phillips, and Suffolk County District Attorney Ray Tierney, have returned the cash or pledged to do so. A fourth, Suffolk County Legislator Anthony Piccarello, said he would donate the money. Santos has said he will not resign and will only leave office if voted out. Read the full story in the Times Union.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information. This is Tom Rowe with Wave Farm with the WGXC Radio News, daily update on what's going on in broadcast news. Tim Cushing reports in TechDirt that Apple is now offering users the option to fully encrypt data stored in its cloud service. Previously, when law enforcement could not access information on a cell phone, they could go around that in some situations by accessing what that locked cell phone had uploaded to the cloud. The Federal Bureau of Investigation was not happy about that announcement, as they would prefer a compromised encryption that only law enforcement can utilize that does not exist. If one creates a gate for law enforcement to get in, then hackers can use that too. Interestingly, the FBI was the only law enforcement agency with a statement against iCloud encryption. Cushing writes that the FBI, quote, has spent much of the past half decade lying about the extent of the problem encryption poses to investigators and insinuating that a solution could be had if only people smart enough to make it happen would stop playing dumb, unquote. Still, Apple made a concession to the FBI, not giving managed Apple IDs and child accounts the option to fully encrypt data. But that might be against the law in the United Kingdom and California. When that gets sorted out, it may be that child accounts are required to be fully encrypted, against the FBI's wishes. And finally, another party that is very much against allowing encryption on phones that would prevent governments from spying on constituents is the Chinese government. They surely won't like Apple's announcement, as it said that encryption, quote, will eventually be offered in China, unquote, which seems unlikely. But even if Chinese citizens won't have encrypted data, it appears residents of the United States will. Read more about this story in TechDirt. T. Carter Ross reports for Radio World that Cuban radio broadcaster, journalist, and DXer Arnaldo de Jesus Coro Antic died at age 80 on January 8, 2023. Radio listeners knew him as Arnie Coro on his twice-weekly program DXers Unlimited on Radio Havana, Cuba, Cuba's English language shortwave service. Cora also co-founded Radio Havana and was a professor of broadcasting at the University of Havana. He joined the Radio Club de Cuba Amateur Radio Association at the age of 12, and then in 1957 began working as a journalist at Canal 7. He was one of the founders of Radio Havana Cuba in 1961, setting up the station's first transmitter before the Bay of Pigs invasion. State broadcaster Radio Cubana gave him the National Radio Award in 2017. Cora's amateur call sign was CO2KK. Read the full story at Radio World. John Brodkin reports for Ars Technica that Nevada's Democrat senators claim that the Federal Communication Commission's new, more detailed broadband map unveiled in November is full of errors, overstating coverage. Quote, Nevada's Office of Science, Innovation, and Technology has found over 20,000 purported broadband serviceable locations on the map that they believe overstate coverage. They also have found incorrect information on the quality of service available to some locations and, in some cases, missing serviceable locations, unquote. Senators Jackie Rosen and Catherine Cortez Masto wrote in a letter to the FCC last week. The FCC's broadband map cost at least $44 million to produce, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The complaints about the map come from all over the country, with the newspaper reporting that the state of New York found 31,000 missing, unserved, or underserved locations. In Vermont, things are worse. Quote, the map is missing or incorrectly lists the location of over 60,000 broadband serviceable locations. The map also lists service availability levels far beyond what the state has found through its mapping and what we are hearing about from residents, unquote, said Vermont Community Broadband Board Executive Director Christine Hallquist in a press release. The new map allows citizens to type in any address and find out broadband availability, but since there are so many reported errors, it is fairly useless. Both the FCC and Congress have rules requiring Internet service providers to submit accurate data for the map. The FCC has a January 13th deadline for consumers to challenge what is wrong about the map. But Rosen and Cortez Masto, the Nevada senators, want the FCC to, quote, work with NTIA to extend the availability and location challenge process by an additional 60 days to give our state broadband office and others the time needed to verify and submit accurate data, unquote. Billions of dollars of broadband grants depend on the map, so hopefully the FCC can make corrections. Read the full story at Ars Technica. Randy J. Stein reports in Radio World that the National Association of Broadcasters is not happy with new rules the Federal Communications Commission proposed to strengthen the process for identifying governmental entities' sponsorship of programming. The new rules are proposed after several foreign governments broadcast propaganda in the United States. For instance, in 2015, a California company, G&E Studio, broadcasting in more than a dozen major cities, was discovered to be backed by a subsidiary of the Chinese government. G&E Studio is 60% owned by a subsidiary of Chinese state-run radio broadcaster China Radio International. The National Association of Broadcasters does not seem to have an ideological opposition to the proposal, now before the FCC, but objects because broadcasters have to spend time and money to fill out forms and prove who owns their stations. An NAB statement on the issue said, quote, we share the FCC's goal of ensuring the public understands when it is watching or listening to a foreign government-sponsored propaganda. While there are very few instances of this type of programming airing, we continue to work with the Commission to right-size its rules concerning on-air identification. The FCC can achieve its goals by placing regulatory burdens only on those airing such programming rather than the entire industry. The vast majority of broadcasters never has and never will air propaganda on behalf of a foreign government, unquote. So the FCC should just trust broadcasters to ask for regulatory burdens? Wouldn't a company broadcasting propaganda be incentivized not to ask for regulatory burdens? A first FCC attempt to adopt new disclosure requirements was overturned by federal appeals court in July 2022, with the court ruling the FCC had no authority to impose a verification requirement. Anyone can make a comment on the FCC's proposed MB Docket 20-299 by January 24th using the Commission's online system with a link on the Wavefarm newsroom. Go to wavefarm.org for more radio news.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Sunday, January 15th. We begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Stewart's Shops in Leeds has got gas for $3.36 a gallon. That's the lowest price according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast for Sunday is a 22. That is low and in the good range. The UV index is a 2, which is high for the winter months. The water temperature in the Hudson River in Albany is about 40.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and that is about 2 degrees above the average over the past 10 years on January 14th, which is about a 38.5 degree temperature. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Sunday with a high of just 33 degrees and a northwest wind around 11 miles per hour with gusts as high as 22 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Sunday night should be mostly clear with a low around 19 and a northwest wind around 9 miles per hour. Monday should also be sunny with a high of 37 and a northwest wind 7 to 9 miles per hour and a low around 22. Tuesday, there is a 50% chance of showers after 1 p.m. with cloudy skies, a high of 39 and a low around 32. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
This is Eunice Jung, and today I'm talking to Dr. Omar Rokbe. Welcome, Dr. Omar Rokbe. You recently visited the People's Health Sanctuary with your organization, Chasing Health. Can you tell me a bit about yourself and what Chasing Health is?
Yes, thank you so much, Eunice, for inviting me to your platform. It's a pleasure to be here. I am Dr. Tina Omorome. I am a family nurse practitioner by profession. I'm also the founder and chief executive officer of Chasing Health. Give you a little background about myself. I was raised and born in Nigeria. I came to this country when I was in my early 20s, and I've been in the United States for more than 30 years now. I'm married and I have three beautiful children and just became a grandmother of two beautiful handsome twin boys. And in terms of Chasing Health is a nonprofit organization under 501c status. What that simply means is that the donations that we get are all tax exempt. The organization was started in 2016 and it's run by nurse practitioners and nurses who are experts in the field of what we do in bringing healthcare services to people in underserved communities. And we do that by providing health education on hypertension prevention, chronic disease management, and blood pressure screenings. And majority of the people that we do see in the community are in the Black and Brown communities, just because most of the chronic diseases that we focus and teach about, they are affected by this disease, likely due to healthcare disparity, lack of access to care, and other social and economic factors.
Is there anything about your personal experience or perspective that made you want to work on this issue in the way you're doing it through Chasing Health?
Yeah, good question. Yes, there is. As a healthcare provider, I see the impact of uncontrolled hypertension in the lives of the patients that I take care of every day, and the number of patients that have stroke due to uncontrolled hypertension and disability from the disease. I also personally developed high blood pressure when I was pregnant with my second child. I had preeclampsia. That was when I was diagnosed with hypertension. And also last year, I lost my uncle to a heart attack due to uncontrolled hypertension. So these are some of the reasons why I'm taking a stand against high blood pressure. And I think one of the greatest problems with high blood pressure is that majority of people have the disease, but they do not know because they don't have symptoms. And this is the reason why it's called the silent killer. Yeah, it is really a bad, terrible disease.
Thank you so much for sharing such a personal story of yours. And I know that you take preventive care and education to places like beauty salons, barbershops, and churches, meeting people in the communities where they live and work. How do you think a place like the People's Health Sanctuary can supplement more traditional healthcare that happens in doctors' offices and hospitals?
Yeah, thank you. I think People's Health Sanctuary is a very unique place. I was there, like you had said earlier. It's a unique place, and it's also a safe place for people from every walks of life to